Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 8, 2021. Doctors at Main Referral Hospital in the capital, Juba, have gone on strike.
The health workers went on a strike. Initially, it started with our services. Then it involved all the health workers, and the whole of the Juba teaching hospital facility was closed down yesterday.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Doctors at Juba Teaching Hospital went on strike last night over unpaid allowances. The doctors say the hospital administration has done very little to fulfill their promises. One of the doctors on strike says he and his colleagues have not received COVID-19 allowances for the past 6 months. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Hundreds of patients are either seated or standing in the waiting room of the crowded emergency department at Juba Teaching Hospital. More than 100 medical doctors at the hospital worked off at the job last evening over 6 months of unpaid COVID-19 allowance. Each doctor expected to get paid more than 300,000 South Sudanese pounds in accumulated allowance. Dr. Luca Dud, one of the doctors who went on strike at Juba Teaching Hospital, says the National Health Ministry and hospital administrators have repeatedly failed to meet the doctors' demands after promising to do so. Dr. Dud says all doctors at Juba Teaching Hospital will remain on strike until the health ministry and hospital administration fulfill their demands.
The health workers went on a strike. Initially, it started with our services. Then it involved all the health workers, and the whole of the Juba teaching hospital facility was closed down yesterday. The reason of the strike is that the health workers are in dire, living condition. They have not been paid their privileges, and I mean the COVID-19 risk allowances that were supposed to be paid for 6 months. The last payment was in January.
Dr. Dud says whenever doctors go on strike, Juba Teaching Hospital administrators and health ministry officials call meeting to reassure doctors that they are working to improve condition at the facility. But he says they have failed time and again to follow through on their commitments. Dr. Dud says the doctors are now determined to continue the strike until their demands are met.
Go back usually on the promises that these problems will be solved. So usually we give them a time frame that, okay, let us go back and we will wait. We follow up, at the end of the day, nothing happens. So this time, all the avenues for solving the problem have been exhausted, and no one is going to go back until our demands are met.
In August this year, house officers and clinical officers at Juba Teaching Hospital went on strike, demanding hospital administrators improve their working condition and provide medicine for the emergency unit. Dr. Dud says this latest strike includes doctors from all different departments at the hospital. Another doctor in the hospital Department of Emergency Unit, who prefers to be identified only as Dr. Lual for fear of reprisals from the administration, says doctors have agreed to compromise with the health ministry and hospital representatives several times before, and now it is time that the government fulfill doctors' demands.
We have tried our best and we have been compromising with them since these days. So it is their time now to compromise. Conducting series of meetings since our last strike with the administration, and all we had are promises. They tell us we are going to solve for you this. At the end of the day, we find nothing tangible. So definitely we have no option other than the strike.
Dr. Lual called on the public to disregard any information suggesting that there are some forces behind the doctor's strike, saying the doctors do not have any political motives or hidden agenda.
The fact is we don't have any force behind us. The only force behind us is the suffering that we are encountering at Juba Teaching Hospital. We are exposed to diseases. We are exposed to patients that comes for help, and at the end of the day, at night, we don't help them because we don't have facilities in place to help them. So the immediate person, the co-patient, or the patient will turn to is the person who is attending to, leaving the administrator who is sleeping home and who has the power to solve the problem.
South Sudan in Focus, reach out to Dr. Maker Isaac, the director of Juba Teaching Hospital, for comment on the strike, but this is all he had to say.
I'm not allowed to comment on it. No, not today. You go to the Ministry of Health. How you go to DG?
A person in the office of the Director General of the National Health Ministry told South Sudan in Focus this morning that the Director General had stepped out of the office and was not available for comment for VOA News. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
A Juba-based human rights observatory group says they have negotiated the release of 43 inmates, including 5 juveniles, from Juba Central Prison. The head of the group says the move was to decongest the overcrowded prison. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has more from Juba.
Godfrey Victor Buller, Executive Director for Justice and Human Rights Observatory, says in August his team, with support from the Human Rights Division of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, launched a screening of inmates with the goal of decongesting prisons and to provide legal aid to inmates. He said the effort led to the release of dozens of inmates.
We have released 43 inmates. The 43 inmates, 2 Nigerians were acquitted of the drug charges brought against them. And out of the 43, there are 5 juveniles that were released, and the total others of 42 are male, those ones under remand. And then we have 1 death row inmate that was convicted to death, but we succeeded his appeal in the Supreme Court. His sentence was altered to life imprisonment. And he already stayed for more than 3/4 of his period already on death row. So we managed to, with the prison authority, to remove the chain from his leg. And now he's remaining with 3 years to come out of the life imprisonment he has been convicted into.
Bula says among those who were released is a group of 32 men, including Chakobanas, who were rounded up and accused of killing someone along the Juba-Nimule Road. He says after a fresh investigation was launched, the 32 were found innocent of all charges and were freed. He says the court acquitted the other 11 inmates of the charges against them. Bula says many South Sudanese are facing economic challenges and the organization is helping to bridge the gap in the violation of human rights for inmates.
Those inmates, some of them may not have money. And most of them, they don't have money, given the fact that poverty is a big challenge to all of us in our society. To hire a lawyer to go and defend lawyers needs money. That's why we, Justice and Human Rights Observatory, we believe that poverty should not be an obstacle for anyone to enjoy his constitutional rights and human rights.
Bula says some court cases are not adjudicated because an investigator has failed to come to court or the investigator has no transport, which means the public is left to pay money for the investigator to go to work. He says that's a big concern, especially for those who cannot afford to hire a lawyer, because it means a prisoner's case cannot move forward. Bula says his group could have released even more inmates, particularly juveniles, but it needs more funding for things like cars to bring the suspects to court. If suspects do not appear, court sessions are often adjourned, which Bula says leads to increased congestion in the court.
One of the challenges is transport. Nobody takes care of it and nobody really thinks it is an issue, but it is a big issue. Number 2, sometimes there is a car, there is no power in the court. This is also another factor. You will bring the inmates, there is no power in the court, and people continue being in the prison and others being brought in the prison. The other challenge, the other factor for congestion in the prison is that some people are being arrested, arbitrary detention and arrest. Some people have no file, some people have no case, but you find that somebody is arrested and put behind bars. an offense that even does not warrant any arrest.
Blair says impunity is also a big problem, saying some people feel they are above the law, and without an arrest warrant, it makes it very difficult for the victim's case to be handled. He says South Sudan needs more police officers, investigators and personnel within the criminal justice system to properly understand the duties and mandates enshrined in the law to ensure that the rights of people who are arrested are respected. When South Sudan in Focus reached out to authorities of the Juba Central Prison to comment on the country's overcrowded prisons, Major General Lukudu Alhag Nicholas, legal officer for South Sudan's National Prison Service, admitted that most inmates at the Juba Central Prison are on remand and that at times their warrants expire due to delays in the courts. Alhag declined to comment further, saying it is the responsibility of the police and the attorney general to talk about the matter since the prison does not make decisions on prisoners who are on remand. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Health officials have launched the first round of the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine in the capital, Juba. South Sudan received thousands of doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine from the U.S. Agency for International Development through COVAX facility last month. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu has more from Juba.
The vaccine is good, it's for protection, can protect even though this one, the sickness affect you, at least we'll have the strength, we'll prevent many things.
That is 45-year-old Juba resident Joyce Coley at Gudele Primary Health Care, speaking a few minutes later after receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Dozens of people converged at the health center to take the jab. This is the first time the country's health ministry has offered the Johnson & Johnson vaccine since it arrived in the country a few weeks ago. Dr. Victoria Anib Majur, the undersecretary in the health ministry, says the launch enables the government to step up its vaccination efforts against the pandemic.
The launching means a lot to us, Ministry of Health. It gives us an opportunity to acquire more vaccines to our population. As you have heard earlier, the coverage is now almost 1% of the population vaccinated because we are not able to acquire the vaccine.
South Sudan is among countries with the lowest number of people vaccinated against COVID-19. Dr. Majur says only about 80,000 people have been vaccinated countrywide, amounting to less than 1% of the country's population. But she says today's launch of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will boost that number significantly. According to South Sudan's Ministry of Health, only about a quarter of those vaccinated are women. Dr. Majur is calling for collective efforts nationwide to ensure that people, especially women, get vaccinated.
I also want to urge my sisters and mothers to come forth to take the vaccination and dispute the rumors that say that COVID-19 vaccination causes infertility. COVID-19 vaccinations are safe for women. They don't cause infertility, they don't affect pregnancy. So please, my sisters and mothers, this is a special message for you.
Dr. Majur also called on the media to help send the message to the masses that COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. Disinformation about vaccines has spread across social media and elsewhere, causing many South Sudanese to hold back from getting the shot. Fabian Denzako, the WHO country representative in South Sudan, says today's launch of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine means South Sudan is stepping up the global fight against the pandemic and helping to reach the goal of having 40% of the world population vaccinated by the end of the year.
This is a really important milestone, and I urge all the partners to support the government to make sure that this rollout goes as quick as possible so that we consume the vaccines and more vaccines can be actually allocated to South Sudan and we achieve the necessary coverage.
Denzako says the WHO hopes to vaccinate 70% of the global population against COVID-19 by June next year. William H. Boyle, the U.S. Chief of Mission in South Sudan, describes the launch as a game changer in South Sudan's efforts to fight the pandemic. He says the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine has fewer mobility challenges in a country like South Sudan.
That means it's going to be able to be deployed well outside of the center to remote outlying areas. It's much easier to get a person in for a single dose with no follow-up required. We know that when there were double doses of the AstraZeneca, many people were not able or just didn't come for the second dose. So this Johnson & Johnson vaccine overcomes that obstacle.
The United States donated 152,950 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to South Sudan. According to statistics from the Ministry of Health, the cumulative number of COVID-19 cases across the country is 12,104, including 130 deaths and 11,617 recoveries. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a U.S.-based think tank calls for economic reforms in Sudan. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
I'll first of all change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A new report by the U.S.-based investigative group The Sentry says Sudan must take action to reform its economy, which is burdened by deep corruption inherited from the administration of the former ousted president Omar al-Bashir. Sentry says Sudan's transitional government must take policy actions to reform the central bank, encourage international investors, and rebuild Sudan's economy. Oliver Winrich. Author of the Central Report released Thursday tells Nabil Biagio 30 years of Bashir's rule destroyed Sudan's economy.
What has happened over the last 2 years since April 2019, when we saw revolution in Sudan, was an economy, a financial setup that was effectively only being used for the betterment of one individual for 30 years, which was the former leader of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, and his cronies. So when we saw the revolution in 2019, there was an inheritance of an economy that had been run for 30 years as a kleptocracy for one person. So there is a significant need for reform within the framework. There's significant need for reform within the financial institutions themselves. And I think that runs very much from the very top, the Sudan Central Bank, all the way through to private financial institutions as well. So what we're talking about is a real need, a real sea change to move from a financial industry that was set up to feed one person to an industry to feed the whole of Sudan.
Your report talks quite a bit about reforming Sudan's central bank, which seems to be at the heart of these reforms and fundamental changes you say must happen to improve the economy. Tell me a little bit about that.
The Sudanese central bank acts as the overall arbiter of the financial industry and the economy in Sudan. So in this report, what we're looking to, or what we're calling for, is that central bank to take a leading role in the improvement of the economy and the improvement of the lives of everyday Sudanese people. And to do that, we need a central bank, as we argue in the report, that is independent, acts as a independent supervisor, and can provide the kind of supervision to banks and other financial institutions which haven't been in place for decades under the rule of Bashir.
Yes, and again, you speak of fundamental changes and deep reforms. What is the importance of this with relation to the transition in Sudan now and the current economic situation, which is quite dire?
Yeah, so despite a number of improvements, despite a number of positive steps by the Sudanese government since 2019, the economy remains incredibly fragile. It remains incredibly weak, in particularly in certain areas, including banking. And so really, we're arguing, or we're calling in this report for the Sudanese government and its international allies to really focus on banking sector reforms, to really focus on putting in place the kind of standards, the kind of framework that's required in order to set up both the central bank and other financial institutions for success. There has been a number of years where Sudan was isolated from the international financial world for various reasons. Many of those hurdles have been overcome. Many of those barriers have been lifted. What we now need to see is the Sudanese Central Bank, financial institutions, and international partners and allies to really implement some really fundamental changes to the way that the banking industry works in Sudan in order to really start to improve the lives of Sudanese people.
That's Oliver Windridge, author of a central report on Sudan's economy. He was speaking to my colleague Nabil Biagio in Washington. Let us know what you think about this show. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We heard from several of you this week about our coverage of South Sudanese lawmakers and their cash transactions in banks such as Wani Michael Elias from Lanya County in Central Equatoria State, who writes, "I am very sorry with the lawmakers concerning journalists reporting about the cash transactions. We as citizens of this country have the right to know about the use of our public funds. So any media house has the right to update the citizens about what is happening in the country, not only on the MPs but other government officials." Mal Adao Mal in Port Town says, "Hello VOA management, South Sudan has no qualified parliamentarians. What we have in the August House are crooks and looters who are there to embezzle the country's resources. What's their motive for hiding the truth about their salaries from the public?" Justin Jabari says, "Hello John and Nabil, I appreciate your work, keep updating us. Corruption is the number one enemy of Zambian people, but it is number one for most African countries. That is why there are many wars in Africa. See how South Sudan is? Many top officials have their banks at home." Mandela from Juba says, "Allow me to thank the mayor of Juba City Council for his wonderful job. Under his leadership, a lot of positive things have been done. You can feel that Juba is a city compared to previous years." Isaac Tang Dak in Bantu Town says, "I first want to thank VOA for always standing in solidarity with us South Sudanese since the start of the current crisis. My point is the total rejection of free visa movements across East African countries. It seems a good beginning of another confusion and also a crisis. Let us see next year. Poor South Sudanese traders and South Sudan itself in regard to such a move." Robert Nyumbe in Kasangati, Kampala City suburb says, "Hello VOA, the only way of controlling these floods in South Sudan is by construction of dams. The government must invest in them heavily rather than supporting other military-related stuff. I am always hooked to this program and loving it. Many thanks." Imbali Vaston from Juba says, "I am so delighted to hear that the World Health Organization has approved malaria vaccine where piloting is taking place in sub-Saharan African countries. I would like to recommend the WHO integrate malaria into the 6 killer diseases so that immunization can start right from the time of enrollment of the child into the EPI department." Ocheng David Mark in Juba writes, I would like to thank Juba City Council for their current practice of demolishing unnecessary temporary structures along the markets in Juba. I also urge them to start building new roads and bridges in the city to reduce the traffic jams during rush hours, because there are hundreds of vehicles pouring into Juba every day. Ohia Francis from Torit says, Hi VOA team. I am ever pleased with the latest events that you cover every time around the world. But for us here in Sudan, things are all in chaos because there is no equal rights granted for the citizens of the country to freely express their freedom of speech, religion, and many others. And moreover, South Sudanese are divided into many classes. Jacob Dior Machuang from Euro Lake State says, The petition issued by Pibor Youth is not only a threat to humanitarian agencies, but to the local populations that are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. The youths of South Sudan shouldn't copy what happened in Eastern Equatoria and Maban as means of getting employment opportunities. We don't disagree that some NGOs are too corrupt when it comes to employment, but let's use means of consulting with our government. John from Juba says, If the Kidgwang faction led by Simon and Olonye make an error of coming to Juba as invited by President Kiir, they will remain in custody like Machar, and that makes the end of the SPLM-IO. Mading Malual Alwong from Malakal writes, To all South Sudanese teachers from village to town who have been teaching under deplorable conditions and still continue teaching, I have figured out teaching is one of the hardest jobs, but it's a noble profession that one should be proud of. Our government betrayed you and don't even care about your welfare. I personally appreciate and recognize my teachers who taught me from the very beginning. Lomodo Charles in Uganda says, My responsibility, our responsibility as lucky South Sudanese is to try to give back to this country as much as it has given us as we continue our South Sudan journey together. Dada from the Uganda Bidibidi refugee camp writes, The only country where you hear everyday killings and arrest, detention is our country. South Sudan's suffering has entered the blood of the people with no permanent solution. Pray for us to get real peace. Carlo Aptiana Iwang in Juba says, The fights among South Sudanese communities has become a monotony. I urge the government to make concrete decisions to stop it. Someone who left no name or location writes, We're having insecurity in Wau South, Hai Jebel Khair, Jazeera Hai Khamis. There is a military group, they defected from IO under the command of Major General Joseph Daniel Dongo, known by the name Arup. They used to attack people at night. They were assigned by the National Security Service in Wau. Malwalda Machok from Juba says, The government should deploy forces in hot spots, areas in Warap State, especially in Tony East County, to avoid further attacks and revenge killings in the local population. The government needs to expedite the disarmament process to restore stability in the greater Warap State. And finally, Bot Bim Do in Juba says, Thanks to John Tanza and Nabil Biagio for providing us with reliable information, but what makes us feel unhappy is the slow implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. The people of South Sudan are really about to lose hope. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. Thanks for all your comments. We really appreciate it. Keep them coming.
Keep your comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with Oliver Mtukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. We have been listening to Oliver Mtukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sobania.